Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel. NFL Week 9, Monday Night Football Edition. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
Good morning. What's the word?
I can't tell you, Payne, how many texts I received from some of our loyal listeners, obviously close friends and family, since that information is not exactly public, asking if we had lost our damn minds when we gave out an over on Thursday's show between the Chargers and Raiders.
It happens sometimes. Got to adapt.
You know,
the market is a-changing.
It's all about adapt and evolve. And so for a lot of our listeners, I'm sure there's others out there thinking, man, these guys have really come far in terms of what they do as far as content. But thankfully, the Raiders and Chargers complied with our best wishes, and we were able to get that one safely home early in the fourth quarter.
Work left to do, but you like the little mini five-game winning streak. Like the board, how it sets up this week. So good things moving forward as well.
And only if we could get our college best bets to actually take place, we'd be in an even better spot with the second cancellation over the weekend, Louisville and Virginia getting shut down. But Payne, thankfully for us at the betting window and our listeners, things worked out a heck of a lot better than they did for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last night against the New Orleans Saints. We knew there was professional money that came in on the Saints, took that number down to right around 3-20 on the close at FanDuel. But good Lord, that was about as piss poor performance we've seen from a Tom Brady team in I don't know how long.
Whoop.
Apparently, I'm not allowed to talk poorly about the Bucks. Otherwise, there's alarms going on around the Payne Insider household.
Still going.
Was it an Amber Alert for the Tampa Bay offense and specifically their rushing attack?
That was pretty annoying. We'll have to figure out how to edit that out. If not, my apologies there. But obviously, with the tropical storm and the, I believe it enhanced to a Category 1 this morning as it's coming in, we got the old flood warning going on there. So
it's always fun.
You're talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, and they're flat out no show. Or do we give the Saints a world of credit for their defensive game plan?
Yeah, a little bit of both, obviously, right? New Orleans came out there and dominated, but when you're a 3-point favorite, you're one of the best teams in the league, you lose by 35. A little bit of it's on your shoulders, too. If you just kind of broad stroke across the board and look at something like offensive EPA, the Bucs' performance last night was the third worst of the entire season. So Tom Brady and the Tampa offense wasn't good. If you look at Brady specifically, completion percentage 6% below expectations. We talked about this off air, but we both heard it as the game's concluding. Al Michaels said at the end of the telecast that we actually witnessed history. So if you manage to stay for the entire game rather than getting a good night's sleep for Monday morning, 5 total rushes, one of which was our guy, the Blaine train there, taking the kneel on the final play, but only 4 run plays between Ronald Jones and Fournette all night. That was the least amount of carries in an NFL game. So that was really interesting. But if you just look, right, along with the Week 1 matchup, when they face each other, it's pretty clear right now the styles are not a good fit for Tampa. Because if you look, Tampa's been running it a little bit more prior to last night. The Saints are really good. 5th in defensive rush efficiency. And then you have Davenport back now, who's healthier. It's allowing Cam Jordan to not see all these damn double teams. And they're getting pressure on Brady. 46% of his dropbacks last night, Brady was pressured. So I think you give all the credit in the world to New Orleans. You look at this, you know, national TV standalone game against their division rival that effectively planted the flag there. And I would guess a lot of the sharp guys this morning, with Michael Thomas back, Emmanuel Sanders back, New Orleans probably catapulted to number 2 in most of the pro bettors' power ratings this morning. So that's pretty interesting. The one thing that gave me hesitation why I couldn't end up getting in on New Orleans, you saw the midweek report where Drew Brees had some shoulder stiffness. He had to work off to the side without pads and throw for one day. And I said, oh, man, this is going to scare me off a winner. And effectively, it did. But just really interesting. It looked like everything was dialed up for New Orleans last night. You finally got Taysom Hill involved in the right spots. You'd kind of been force-fed and was hindering the offense a little bit. You know, you paid him all that money in the offseason. You couldn't figure out the best ways to implement him. Last night, I thought Sean Payton kind of got him going in the right spots. And if you look, when Taysom Hill was on the field, the Saints averaged 3.6 more yards per play last night. So overall, just a very, very good game from New Orleans. But I think a lot of that has to come on the shoulders of Tampa Bay as well. They just don't know who they are yet. They're still trying to figure things out. And this is typically the time, week 8, week 9, week 10, where you start to see some things come together. We saw Antonio Brown get going a little bit last night. Be interesting to see how much more involved he is in this offense. Tom Brady looks like he's comfortable with him already. They did have that one miscommunication play down the sidelines, but I think he's going to be a valuable weapon. Because you look at Godwin, that finger injury looks like it's going to impact him here for the next couple of weeks. Mike Evans, you know my feelings on Mike Evans. So
they're well documented.
Yeah, I think he's a very good player. I just don't know if he's like a true number one in every sense. And I was stunned. It looked like he was going to be out a long time. It looked like he injured his groin there. I texted you. I was like, holy cow, that could be a serious injury. And then he's out back out in the field like two plays later. So I don't know what's going on. But they just got to figure out who they want to be offensively. They're still having an identity crisis on that side of the ball for Tampa.
It'll be interesting to see how the Bucs rebound from this. We've seen Tom Brady and company face adversity in the past. But like we said, it's only halfway through the NFL regular season, so a lot of time to sort it out. And the Saints are going to make a lot of teams, if their defense plays that well, look real bad going forward.
You get a nice little respite this week against the Panthers defense. So maybe we see Tampa start to get some things going offensively.
You'd have to hope. You should be able to get not only your passing attack working here, but obviously your ground game. And it looks by all intents and purposes that Carolina will go back to life without Christian McCaffrey, dealing with a shoulder injury suffered in their near victory against the Kansas City Chiefs. Mike Davis probably set to take on an increased workload. You have to imagine Carolina is going to exercise a ton of caution with the face of their franchise. But man, I'll tell you one thing. After watching that game in its entirety, you remember how much fun and how good he is as a player in terms of the elements he brings, both catching the ball out of the backfield and running between the tackles with a ferocity that you don't see from every running back, especially those named Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, CMC was awesome yesterday. I thought the Panthers played pretty well. I mean, that was one of those games.
Yeah, you have to give him a ton of credit. I mean, and I guess it's a good transition or segue, whatever we want to call it, to the good, the bad, and the ugly. I mean, Matt Rhule and Teddy Bridgewater have something. We talked about it before the season. You wondered where their wins were going to come from just because their schedule didn't appear to be that manageable on paper. But offensively, they've made strides. Defensively, we know they're young. And I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about what's going on down there in Charlotte.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people listening to this will be surprised, right? How do the Panthers make the good section of this despite losing? But I thought they were really good yesterday. Carolina actually outgained the Chiefs in their building, and they did the thing that we kind of discussed is the way to beat the Chiefs. Hold on to the ball. And they possessed it for over 38 minutes. And, you know, that's after Russell Wilson threw up on himself yesterday four times. That's how good MVP Patrick Mahomes is. 33 points on 58 snaps. Not bad. But keeping Mahomes on the sidelines obviously helps. And you look, Carolina's never outside the number. But what I liked was the mindset. Carolina came in losing, I believe, three straight. You look at Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, and they probably glanced at the spread because I know those guys pay attention to it. And they're like, hey, we're going high variance game plan here. Then they execute it to perfection. Carolina could run it enough. They had a controlled passing game. We know how good the Chiefs secondary is, so Teddy wasn't able to push the ball downfield. I think his average depth of target was 4.2 yards. But he took what the Chiefs gave him. Completion percentage was good, 7% above expectation. It's just the mindset of the coaching staff is excellent. They go for it on fourth down, a couple trick plays, including the fake punt. Carolina, I think, is building this thing the right way. You just hope that Joe Brady sticks around a little while longer and you can see this thing through. I'm not sure that's going to ultimately be the case, but they're well coached. They play hard. They fight. It's everything you're looking for in an underdog.
I'm making Joe Brady a favorite to leave Charlotte by the end of this season. If you're asking me to set odds, will Joe Brady return to the Carolina coaching staff in 2021? I'm making him an underdog to be in that role.
If you're Atlanta, you probably have to make the plunge.
Yeah, somewhere, whether it's in the National Football League or a college program looking to try and hit the reset button, you have to imagine Joe is going to be one of your top two calls.
You would have to. And it might be a large leap to be on the NFL level, but he is the hottest name right now. And we've seen offensive, we'll call them wizards, take that leap. The other thing that was interesting here, and I don't know if you caught this, and I probably shouldn't divulge this because it's probably has some impact moving forward, but Joe Brady was on the sidelines this week for the first time, came out of the booth. So it's really interesting there. But, you know, for the sake of someone like a Matt Ryan, who's at the tail end of the prime, and Julio Jones at the tail end of the prime, and still having Calvin Ridley on the rookie deal, you got to go get an offensive mind for Atlanta. This feels like at least the right plunge if you were to go get Joe Brady.
Oh, I caught that part, and that's part of the reason that I make him an underdog to return to Charlotte, because that's, I think, has been one of the biggest questions when you have a potential head coach that had never called plays on the sidelines. I think that's the first time he'd ever done that, so we'll see if it's a trend that emerges for Carolina the rest of the season. Payne, I want to give credit to my man who made us a lot of money last year in his senior season in Corvallis. Jake Luton goes out there and impresses for the Jacksonville Jaguars game one. More importantly, DJ Chark, you're no longer on a milk carton. You're actually an NFL caliber wide receiver for the first time in weeks.
Did you see what happened during the bye week?
To DJ, I did not.
He got married. So my feeling is he was energized coming out of that wedding and had a big day. Hopefully that helps your fantasy team. I know you had some question marks about your flex. If you can get DJ Chark going with a competent quarterback that can throw the ball, playing catch up most weeks, probably. That's not a bad
thing. You mean my decision to, start J.K. Dobbins wasn't going to put me in good standing for flex appeal this past week?
Tough spot there. I figured he was going to show up, but that was not the case. They decided to give Gus Edwards a few more carries after fumbling inside the five, which was odd. I'll be honest with you, didn't watch a single snap of the Jacksonville game. If I get really bored, I'll go and do that. But it sounds like, looking at the numbers, he was pretty good. I did catch, because coverage switched over, I saw the Barry Sanders like pirouette into the end zone there. I did catch that, and then they missed the two.
Hey, it's always good to see a man that's about 6'4", 6'5", show his ability in the open field and make a defender miss. Then again, I think you and I might be able to get members of the Houston Texans secondary to miss tackles in the open field. Maybe more an indictment of that than anything else. But what else stood out to you,
by the way, and it wasn't bad to your point. I do have the metrics, even though I didn't watch the game. 7.4 yards per pass attempt, 55% passing success rate for Jake, 4 explosive passes. So sounds like he had a good day. Obviously, first start, not a lot of film on him, and then it is the Texans secondary. Let's see what it looks like here against Green Bay this week.
Playing in cold weather. I mean, hey, you get accustomed to that kind of thing up in Corvallis. But yes, no doubt, Green Bay, extra time to prepare. At Lambeau, a much different task than playing at home against the Houston Texans. What else stood out to you over the weekend, Payne, as far as some of the positive takeaways?
Josh Allen's back, baby. So we dove into that game and spent a ton of time on it. I think we actually broke it down for about 20 minutes on Thursday's show. And a lot of people will probably listen to some of these shows and be like, you're making excuses for this team or this player. But that one seemed pretty obvious to me, that we were able to identify what was really going on with Buffalo. They were put in some really crappy spots with the COVID reschedulings and the weather. And we kind of pointed out that it was going to be beach weather in Buffalo. And sure enough, I believe it was the warmest home November game in history. And it was just ripe for Josh Allen to have a big day there. And sure enough, he did. Completion percentage, 13% above expectation. Josh Allen didn't have a single turnover worthy play the entire game, which is impressive when you see a guy who was sacked 7 times and did have some pressure on him. What was the difference was Russell Wilson, once again, kind of plagued by some turnovers, had 4, 2 of which were fumbles. But if you look from the onset, Brian Daboll knew with good weather that he was going to come out and open up this offense. The first 3 quarters, Daboll passed on 22 of 25 first downs. Everyone was wide open. And you look, Josh was kind of just, you know, orchestrating the whole thing, just found the open guy. He wasn't really keying on anyone, whether it was John Brown, whether it was Diggs. Everyone was just open. He was just finding the open guy. It was perfect. 8.6 yards per pass attempt, a 56% passing success rate, 9 explosive throws. And I know the big thing coming into this game was Jamal Adams was back. He was going to be a difference maker. My mind is, unless this guy's a blitzer or a box safety, it's just not going to go well. Once Buffalo spread Seattle out, went 3-4, even 5 wide receivers, forced Jamal Adams into coverage. Adams couldn't cover the sun with one finger. And that's basically what it's coming down to right now. So I don't know what type of help he's going to provide in coverage. You had Griffin out, which was a huge loss in the secondary. That's the key. You need to get the secondary a little bit healthier. And they were talking about playing more dime, because this kid Neal had performed pretty well with Adams out. If you can play more dime once Griffin comes back, once Neal is a little healthier, and just kind of allocate Adams to the box full time to help in the ground game, to be that blitzer, maybe the secondary starts improving for Seattle a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, not a ringing endorsement. Buffalo more or less said, hey, look, we're not going to run the football or even try to against Seattle's defense. That's a strength in terms of being top 10 in that particular department. Gash them through the air, but as you mentioned, Russell Wilson with some better decision-making, and you hate to be critical of a guy who's put together a tremendous season. Game could be a little bit different than even the 78 points we saw scored in the 44-34 Buffalo win. Payne, I'm not sure there's enough good things we can say about one of your Florida State products, a man who went healthy, arguably one of the most dynamic playmakers in the entire NFL. Dalvin Cook proved to us that last week's performance against Green Bay wasn't a fluke. 24 touches, 250-plus yards, and a pair of touchdowns in Minnesota's 34-20 win. I mean, who needs Adam Thielen? Who needs Justin Jefferson? Just get Dalvin Cook the ball in space and watch him go out there and do his work.
It's pretty wild to see. And he has just been fantastic. And I think Minnesota is another team in general that's been pretty impressive recently. They overcame the large resistance yesterday from pro bettors. I don't think the Vikings are good, but they're starting to get things going a little bit. They're starting to turn things to, you know, around. They're starting to put some things together. They look organized, and they have some nice pieces that are starting to play well. And if you look, Minnesota's won 3 of their last 5. Could be 4 of 5 if they held on at Seattle. I know Galladay was out. Stafford hadn't practiced all week. Then he leaves early with the concussion. But that was like a butt-whooping yesterday. And you look at all the numbers. Minnesota outgained Detroit by 3.2 yards per play. The Vikings own the trenches, as you kind of alluded to there with Dalvin Cook having a day. 8.1 yards per rush. 74% rushing success rate with 9 explosive runs. It was wild to watch. Defensively, the Vikings secondary is still injured, still inexperienced, but it looks like they're at least starting to understand Zimmer's system. Interesting line, though, next Monday night there, Todd.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in the look-ahead lines just a few minutes down the road. Anything else good that you wanted to touch on before we transition to a glass-half-empty type mentality?
I thought the Ravens played a pretty good game there, and this is the games that we kind of focus on. Again, you outperform the market. I'm probably going to make a case to include you in the good section of this. We saw Baltimore opened a 3-point favorite, closed a consensus 1-point underdog. Looked early, ugly early on there. And you just break this game down by quarter. Baltimore allowed 8.1 yards per play and a 63% success rate in the first quarter. And if you kind of just went on to social media there, specifically Twitter, basically the Ravens were done. Like, blow up the entire system. This is what you saw on social media after the first quarter. And then you get the huge defensive play that flipped the game, was the fumble 6. And if you look, the final 3 quarters, Indy's offense averaged 4.2 yards per pass attempt, a 39% success rate. Baltimore's offense then got going a little bit. It still doesn't have a ton of pop, but in the second half, they look competent. And 82% success rate in the second half for Baltimore's offense. All 10 of Baltimore's second half passes were successful, 11.9 yards per pass attempt. It's a big win, I think, for Baltimore, especially when you put it in context. The huge move against your best corner, Marlon Humphrey's out with the big C there, and then 7 other guys missed practice for contact tracing virtually the entire week. So I thought it was a big bounce back for Baltimore there. Hopefully they get some confidence on offense, figure out what's going on with the pass game a little bit, try to get your horses involved a little bit more.
Yeah, and in the third quarter, you saw Baltimore, I believe, run north of 30 plays compared to the Colts for dominating the trenches, time of possession. And they showed the ability to come back in a game, something that we haven't really grown accustomed to with Lamar Jackson, always a much better front runner in their ability to suck the life out of the game by physically imposing their will in their ground and pound attack. But with the good, of course, comes the bad, and I think Payne, the Bears offense, underwhelmed yet again. Although if you dig into some of the full game numbers, yes, the Bears were kept off the scoreboard for the better part of three quarters. They were actually better and more dynamic offensively than Titans, even in a 7-point loss.
Both the Bears and Titans offenses were bad. And at one point, Todd, when it was 17-0, and I'm kind of watching the game from afar, like it's on a screen, but I'm just, you know, not paying a ton of attention to it. I'm like, okay, this seems normal. Low scoring grinder, kind of what I thought, just Tennessee has more weapons. Then I woke up this morning and dig into the box score, and it was like, good God. And, you know, we make jokes about Matt Nagy's offense all the time. But if you look, Tennessee, 228 total yards themselves, 4.1 yards per play, a 35% success rate for the Titans offense. If you remove A.J. Brown's four catches and you look at the other 51 offensive snaps for Tennessee's offense, 2.4 yards per play on all other plays. Ryan Tannehill played arguably his worst game of the season. Completion percentage 11% worse than expectations. He's the leader in the clubhouse. Now, you have Cam and Flacco this evening, but right now, in terms of completion percentage above expectation, Ryan Tannehill, the worst performance of the week. Chicago wasn't much better. 5 yards per play against the 20th most efficient defense. Man, it was terrible to start that game. He tried running the ball without four linemen, and of course that didn't work. 2.8 yards a carry, 25% success rate on the ground, one explosive rush all game for Chicago. But, you know, you got to get that ground game going when you're down four linemen. So I don't know what's going on there with Chicago. They got to get that figured out. My feeling is Bill Lazor needs a larger input on what's going on offensively, and I don't think Matt Nagy is overly receptive to hearing things outside of his own little circle there. Hopefully that changes here on an extended week. And if it does, then you think Chicago could potentially have some success against Minnesota's defense.
It's simply incredible. I mean, I really begin to feel for Bears fans. We made fun of them going into last year saying, hey, look, don't get too excited about the 2019 season. 2018 was a mirage. But the offense continues to trend in the wrong direction. And when, as you alluded to, can't move the ball against that Titans defense. Not exactly a ringing endorsement for where they're headed as far as evolving as a group. Payne, when are the Los Angeles Chargers going to find a way to win a close game? They invent ways to lose when they have big leads. And then yesterday, they have a chance for a game-winning drive late, a potential comeback, two balls on fade routes on back-to-back plays, one to Michael Williams and one to Donald Parham Jr. The Chargers come up just a bit short against a division rival, Las Vegas Raiders.
As someone who hates the 50-50 jump ball, it was actually the right play to Mike Williams initially because it's probably the only way you can get two plays off with 6 seconds. That's probably the only way, is that quick shotgun one-step throw. And Mike Williams has to come down with that ball, bottom line. And we're not even discussing this. Second guy, I don't even know, not even pronounce his name, but again, in his hands, kind of falls out. Got
to
catch
third string tight end. You're thrown to a third string tight end on the most pivotal play of the entire game after Williams fails to come down with the first attempt.
Yeah, Williams goes down. And again, I don't know situationally. I'm not at their practice, whether he's, you know, their third string tight end or he's their second best jump ball guy. I don't know. But the last play doesn't need to be a jump ball because it's the last play. You can actually run a natural play. So that's why the first play, I didn't mind the jump ball because it's the it's the only way you can get off two plays. But the second one makes no sense because you have all the time in the world at that point. So you're hoping that maybe you can get, you know, Keenan Allen on a crosser on the back of the end zone if they decide to play zone. I didn't love a lot of the play calls. It's just there needs to be a new coach. I'm not a big Anthony Lynn guy. You don't love all the things that are going on there. I think he's on the hot seat. But this isn't new to just Anthony Lynn. This is a team that we've talked about for ages that has gobs of talent, continues to underperform and get hit by the injury bug. We saw Joey Bosa out again. Casey Hayward did play, but was a game time decision, and he was a little bit nicked up as well, got burnt on the deep ball there to Nelson Aguilar. But it just seems to be the same thing every single year with this Chargers team. Loads of talent, underachieved, constantly hit by the injury bug. You just start to wonder what's going on there, and I don't have answers, but it's the same thing every year.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you'd almost go, hey, look, we can understand if we're deficient from a talent standpoint. It's even worse when you continue to compile losses, knowing that you have still one of the more talented rosters in the entire league. You're just not playing up to their potential. You figure at some point, just
problem, Todd, think about how unlucky these guys are for a second. You finally get Brian Bulaga back, okay? Your left tackle, you got him back. His back is healthy. After the play happens early on the first drive, someone just smokes him in the back, and he's out the rest of the game. It just seems to be the luck the Chargers have. So they played, the game still goes over without their left tackle, someone we kind of projected to be in that the market didn't know was actually going to play. We get him in there, and then the first drive, poof, gone. So wasn't happy about that initially, but happy the game went over. But that just seems to be the Chargers' luck. And the same, Justin Jackson, supposed to be their lead back yesterday. Instead,
what do you have, one carry?
Kellen, yeah, gets injured. And Kellen Ballage, who's played, I think, on four teams this year, is their lead back.
Hey,
Anthony Lynn force feeds him. You got to force feed the guy you just signed. You got to get Kellen Ballage
never
in the
rule
game,
out. You never rule out the viability of an Arizona State running back that's seventh on the depth chart when it comes to game game critical situations and making sure he gets his necessary touches. For the ugly, and this is by no fault of his own, you hate to see Kyle Allen lost for the season. Yet another NFC East quarterback going down to a gruesome injury. So you hope for a speedy recovery in that department. I'm not quite sure what Washington will ultimately elect to do at the quarterback position. Alex Smith steps in, 300 yards passing, one touchdowns with three picks. You figure it's now or never for Dwayne Haskins, but I'm leaning more towards the never part. And then, of course... then, of course, you see ugly pain in victory, and it's rinse and repeat. They're the only undefeated team in the NFL. This is the deepest they've gone in the season with an unblemished mark, but it's road Mike Tomlin and road Big Ben needing to snatch victory out of the jaws of defeat with a 15-0 fourth quarter after the Cowboys led for 57 minutes yesterday.
That was the other game I didn't watch. Was the first one you mentioned there was Washington and the Giants.
Nobody did. It's okay. Nobody did.
We'll probably go back and dig around there just to see what we can find. Seemed like Alex Smith played a respectable game. I saw at one point they were down 20-3, battled back a little bit. I didn't see the Kyle Allen injury. I really don't want to go back and watch it either. In terms of the second game, there was some sharp money there on Dallas once it got above the two touchdown mark. Then Zeke got announced in, closed 14. But you're right. That's just kind of these spots where we see Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers historically play to the level of their competition. It was a tough spot, obviously. And Dallas hangs within the number. But the one thing that we said on Thursday is like, we can't figure out like where Garrett Gilbert is. Like, this has got to be the guy. He's much better than DiNucci. We've seen him win awards in other leagues. He's a competent passer. He knows where the ball needs to go. Now he's got a pea shooter for an arm, but at least he can manage an offense. And in that looked to be the case. Dallas appears to have gotten hosed again on the interception late in the end zone. It looked like Amari Cooper got absolutely tackled. So I'm not sure what went on there. And then you have the Jalen Smith ticky-tack, I would call it. It is by the letter of the law, but a little ticky-tack foul there, which kept the drive alive that Eric Ebron later scored a touchdown on to take the lead. So misfortunes for Dallas, did enough to stay within the number, but that's a game that Dallas probably should have won. And you like some of the creativity. Right, that's the one thing. With Mike McCarthy, it's like, hey, not the greatest coach. But we did see some creativity with the punt. And it set them up for some points. When you're an underdog that large, these are the kind of things you need to be doing. You need to understand that you're an underdog. Play a little bit of a higher variance game. Now, you didn't like they apparently kicked a field goal instead of going for it on fourth and an inch later on in that game. But at least they had an idea that they were an underdog. I loved the throwback punt play. And the defense is showing some effort and energy. And that's what you can hope for at this point. Your hope is that eventually they'll get a little bit more acclimated to Nolan's defensive system. And then in combination with the energy and effort increasing, things start to get a little better on that side of the ball.
Yeah, they showed fight. It's the second straight week we've seen fight from the Cowboys, so I'm not going to ridicule them for that. There's no doubt they were deficient from a talent standpoint. And if it's not for a couple of the things that you mentioned, Amari Cooper getting mugged in the end zone, the hands to the face for Big Ben on 3rd and 10, which ironically enough happened to Tom Brady, I think, on the first or second play from scrimmage, and there's no call in that game. But, you know, it's NFL officiating inconsistency that changes the dynamic. So not crying over.
I texted you. I was like, that's the worst call ever. How can you call it in that spot? And you're like, it's by the book. It's by the letter of the law.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing.
And I didn't respond to corporate Todd because, of course, it was by the letter of the law. And then the very first play in Sunday Night Football, same thing happened. They didn't call it. I was
they let it go. Baby. You know, it's one of those things. You know, as a big-time hockey fan, you want refs to swallow the whistle in the third period. In the National Football League, they seem to want to call everything in the fourth quarter. We don't need to call it early on in the game, but we're going to call it late, especially to protect some of our stars. And you wonder how much differently that game could have potentially ended for the Steelers had they had to punt the ball and Dallas had a chance to run the clock out with about 4 minutes left. But
yeah,
anyways... Some of the main things and takeaways that we've seen, we joked before the show, Payne, that this was going to be one of our quicker podcasts. As I look at the clock, we're about a half hour in, so we know those aspirations are quickly out the window. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider.
I don't have much for the game tonight. Sorry to say.
Well, that's good. We can run a two-minute drill. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there in the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. A trio of look-ahead lines, Payne, that I wanted to bring up for our listeners. Right now, this one I had written down, but the market has since already corrected itself, would have been the Philadelphia Eagles against the New York Giants. Look-ahead number here had the Eagles a 3.5-point favorite. FanDuel reopened the game 3, but as I check now, number out to 4, so probably not a whole heck of a lot to talk about in that particular regard. So if we move on to the next, your beloved Miami Dolphins, 3-point favorite is where this game opened at FanDuel. Coming into the week, we would have been looking at Miami about a 1.5-point favorite.
So I think you have to just like the overall makeup of the Miami Dolphins right now. There's just a lot of positive energy, positive vibes. Brian Flores is building this in the right direction. Everyone has bought in. Now, the question mark I have is what's going on with Preston Williams? We've talked about this two-headed receiver group with Preston on one side, Devontae Parker on the other. Preston exited with a foot injury. They carted him off. Shoes were off. Now, apparently the x-rays came back negative, but we'll have to monitor the Preston Williams situation because after the opt-outs to two key receivers this offseason, there isn't a ton of depth at that position. But I think the biggest thing here is you have to like what Miami has done defensively. They're doing just enough. The secondary played like crap yesterday, but there's at least some energy. There's at least some fight there. Tua made that game two leap that we were looking for. And the numbers weren't the best, but it was a very efficient performance. The thing to me when I watched, though, which was really important, he had happy feet in the Rams game. Didn't know where to go with the ball. This performance against Arizona, he felt a little more poised in the pocket. He set his feet and threw. It wasn't happy feet. He did some things in the backfield that we've kind of seen Tua do, just kind of rabbit out of the hat. Huge first down pickup. So he just felt more comfortable in the pocket, which is key here. And it helped the offense. You knew in a game like this, you couldn't be run heavy because you were going to give up some points, especially after your defense played 90 snaps in the Miami humidity against the Rams the week prior. You knew the offense was going to have to score some points here. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Obviously, Todd, we talk about the Chargers not being able to win games. This is the role that fits them a little bit better as a dog, not a favorite. So it'll be interesting to see if this gets to 3, what the overall mindset is. Not shocking, though, a third straight week, we have seen one group take a liking to the Chargers under. Apparently not overly savvy, knowing that the Chargers seem to be throwing the ball a little bit more these days. So it'll be interesting to see where that total goes.
Yeah, imagine that. Tua feeling much more comfortable in the pocket against the Arizona defense without Chandler Jones compared to how he did in his NFL debut with Aaron Donald bringing down his neck. I think all of us would feel a little bit better with those two particular situations set up side by side.
Devin Kennard was also out with the COVID injury. So that was he had graded out as the Cardinals' best defender to that point. So him out as well along the defensive line was a huge help for Miami.
And you mentioned this game, Payne, one that we'll preview a week from today on Monday Night Football. We've seen a major role reversal between the Bears and Vikings.
Yes. Not sure where this line's ultimately going to settle. But we're looking at a Vikings team that is certainly playing much better. You just have to monitor some of the injury situations to the secondary. Let's see if they get some of those guys back. You'll have to pay attention to the interior line of the Bears. They're without their center. They're already down a couple guys along that O-line. So I think we're going to pay attention to the injuries. But this is typically a spot where the Bears have shown out just to be a little bit better here. I doubt we'll get to 3. It wouldn't stun me if we see this line come back down a little bit, but we'll see. I'm not 100% certain, but basically what we're seeing in the number itself is the Bears, as we projected a few weeks back, extremely overrated compared to the record. The Vikings at 1-5, probably undervalued, and we've seen those two things materialize in recent weeks, and we're seeing it again here with this number for Monday Night Football. I know a game will break down a week from today.
Yeah, life comes at you fast in the National Football League. Back on Thursday, October 8th, the Bears found themselves closing as a 3.5-point underdog against the Tampa Bay Bucks. A month later, they find themselves in primetime again, this time as a 2.5-point home underdog against the Minnesota Vikings. But alas, Payne, before we get to next week, we do have one game still to wrap up everything that we've seen in Week 9. And, of course, that is an AFC East showdown from MetLife Stadium, where it's the New York Football Jets playing host to the New England Patriots. New England, a 9.5-point favorite at FanDuel. Total in this game, 41.5. And congratulations to the Jets. They're one loss away from their worst start in franchise history. They've compiled a 13-26 against the spread record their last 29 games overall. They're 7-23 straight up their last 30 versus the AFC. But the Patriots, not to be outdone, a loss tonight would mark their first 5-game losing streak since 1995, when Bill Parcells was walking the sidelines in Patriots red, white, and blue. No idea where you want to go with this game, but I'm going to put you on the clock. I think we got what? You want to go about 3 minutes on this breakdown for Monday Night Football?
So let me ask you, how do you feel about Bill Belichick?
I still feel that Bill has no talent on his roster. And I'm going to say this, that if he was allowed to trade Tom Brady a few years ago and still keep Jimmy Garoppolo, even as injury prone, this storyline would be significantly different. But Payne, let's not kid ourselves. You could be the best coach in the National Football League. You look at the receivers that New England has on their roster. I don't think anybody could win. You might not even be able to win a Sun Belt title with those guys.
I agree with what you're saying. But you know he has a large hand in that aspect of the organization as well.
Oh, there's no doubt that he bears a brunt of the responsibility for as depleted as they are from a skill position standpoint on the offensive side. Tom Brady, we know, masked a lot of those deficiencies in terms of what he was able to overcome in the past years. Defensively, I don't want to raise too many red flags. I feel like this is a lost year with all the opt-outs that you outlined beforehand. But there's no doubt New England has to try and figure out who they're going to be, because this season, hey, look, if you finish this year 6-10, it's not the end of the world. But you better have a game plan in place and know what direction you're going to go in when 2021 comes rolling around.
Some rumors are surfacing that Jimmy G could potentially make his way back to New England. We shall see. Will be interesting how that could potentially unfold. As for this game, let's break it down a little bit, but again, this is one of those ones that's more about the number. Patriots offensively are going to need to figure out how to get the ground game going. Quinnen Williams looks like he is out for the Jets. Otherwise, you would think this would be a game that's potentially on Cam's shoulders, because the Jets came in 10th in defensive rush efficiency. They were second in run stop win rate. So you said, hey, like, this could possibly be a game that is completely on Cam's shoulders. But with Quinnen Williams out, I think that hurts the Jets' defensive line a little bit here. If you are Cam Newton, you just need to get the confidence going. You know, complete a couple balls. If you're Josh McDaniel, get Cam some easy throws. Get him some easy throws over the middle. That's the area where he's been best. That's the area where the Jets have a tough time defending. But the other positive here for Cam is he hasn't been very good under pressure. 35 passer rating under pressure, 0 touchdowns, 4 picks with the heat on. Jets are 30th in pressure rate. So offensively for New England, get the ground game going a little bit. But I think early on, Cam needs to see the ball go through the hoop, so to speak. Get him some easy throws over the middle of the field. Get him some easy throws on some screens. And I think they'll have a chance here. It's partly why we're seeing this over tick up a little bit, because I think we're going to see a Patriots offense that does have a little bit more success than we've grown accustomed to seeing the last few weeks, Todd.
Yeah, hard to be worse in terms of passing what we've seen for a full body of work from New England. I didn't realize, Payne, until I dug into this game, that Cam Newton has 8 total touchdowns this season, but only 2 of them of the passing variety. I felt like he had more than that when we were talking about his renaissance, so to speak, against Seattle way back when. But now you put an asterisk by any quarterback's passing numbers against that Seahawks defense. Jacoby Myers has been the beneficiary. He looks to be developing a little bit of rapport. 10 catches for 118 yards over the last two games. Damian Harris quickly emerging as the number one running back option for the Patriots. Meanwhile, the Jets on
this one?
What'd you say?
Is Damian Harris a full go on this one? I know there was some limited practices this week. Yeah, I think he's going to play, obviously. But it looks like he's kind of taken the backfield into his possession. Hopefully he's 100% healthy tonight, because he could have a decent game here.
On the other side of the ball, we know New England has really struggled defensively this season. They've given up 126 yards on the ground in 5 out of the last 6. Passing defense numbers look a little bit better, but I consider the quality and caliber of opponents and weather, so I'm not putting a whole lot of stock in that. Meanwhile, you look at the Jets, though. Let's not sugarcoat this. Sam Darnold's quarterback rating last among qualifying quarterbacks. We know he's out. Joe Flacco will get the nod tonight. The Jets have scored a grand total of 29 points in their last 4 games. Their passing offense doesn't matter who's under center, even if it's Chad Pennington or Pat O'Brien. Or Ken O'Brien, I think that was the quarterback's name. Pat O'Brien's the Hurricanes down in New Orleans. Passing offense, 32nd in yards per game, 32nd in yards per pass attempt. The Jets haven't been able to move the sticks. But tonight, Payne, you'd have to think that maybe with a healthy receiving core, and if they decide to give the ball to LaMichael Perine instead of your beloved Frank Gore, that maybe there's potential for this Jets offense to look halfway competent.
Listen, we're trying to make history with Frank Gore. We're trying to get him potentially to that Emmett Smith status. And as long as Adam Gase is in the league, that could be a possibility.
The only history Frank Gore's going to make is that he may be the only active NFL running back whose son is also on his same team as an active NFL running back at some point.
Yeah, he's trying to channel his inner LeBron. LeBron's trying to play as long as he can so him and his son can play together on the same team. Frank Gore might be trying to accomplish the same thing. We'll see. But you kind of hit on this. First game all season where the Jets are going to have Jamison Crowder, Rashad Perriman, and Denzel Mims all healthy. So you're going to see an uptick there at receiver. At the same time, Stephon Gilmore out for this Patriots defense. And I think the biggest thing here is we talk about the number all the time. And I think that's the most important thing. I don't think the downgrade from Darnold to Flacco is 3 points, especially through the 7 and to the 10. And you could maybe make the case with how Darnold's performed against Belichick's defenses that maybe a veteran quarterback like Flacco that's faced Belichick defenses when they were actually better and had some success could be a better fit tonight. I mean, Flacco's completed 67% of his career passes against Belichick, and I know it's not apples to apples, right? Like, the Baltimore teams were way better than what Flacco has now. Flacco was in his prime. But it's a game where at least you know your quarterback isn't going to be afraid, and I'm not sure we could have said that about Darnold against Belichick. Now, the one thing Belichick's defense has done well this season, Todd, is get pressure. Somehow they're the second best in pressure rate in the NFL, if you can believe that. The Jets are 31st in the NFL in pass block win rate. And if you know Adam Gase, the guy loves to live in 11 personnel, and he struggles to scheme stopping pressure. He's just out there living life. He'd be, you know, 5 linemen. We're going to spread this thing out. Running back comes out of the backfield. It's very rare that he is able to protect his quarterbacks. And that's the one thing we saw last year where Belichick was smart enough to scheme pressure. Guys were just coming in unblocked. That'll be the key tonight is, can the Jets pass protect? Can they handle some of these exotic pressures from Belichick? If they can, I think Flacco's going to have some minimal success here. Now, let me be candid. At 7, saw sharp money on the Patriots, very sharp money, partly getting out ahead of the Sam Darnold news. This morning at 41, which is also a key number, important to note that we saw some over money. But I can tell you, I don't make this game 10. I make it kind of where it started. I don't know if I'm going to find myself on the Jets. We were posed with this situation by a New York team last week, and we ultimately didn't pull the trigger, even though we saw value, Todd. I'm hoping I don't have to pull the trigger again, but good God, this looks like it's trending towards 10.5.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I think it almost appears to be a slight runaway freight train. I haven't looked at the overall bet splits, didn't reach out to John and the FanDuel team this morning to see how this game is getting bet, but simply mind-boggling when you consider the fact that the Jets closed, albeit with Sam Darnold, and we know how the market values him over Joe Flacco, as 9-point home underdogs against Buffalo on a Sunday game. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? Everything 2 weeks ago, everything kind of blends together. And now all of a sudden we're talking about a Patriots team as a 10-point favorite who, last I checked, was a 4.5-point underdog last weekend against the aforementioned Buffalo Bills. And while the Jets don't have a whole heck of a lot to play for this year, you'd have to imagine in prime time and Monday Night Football, given some of the player quotes and coaches, that if there was going to be an all-in effort, it would come on this kind of stage.
Yeah, and let me be candid here. Like, for the guys that are listening to this that absolutely need to have action, I'm not telling you the Jets are going to cover this game tonight, but what I am telling you is you are going to lose gobs of money long-term if you're laying it with the Patriots at 10. And that's the only thing that I can tell you at this point.
Funny point on that. I got a text message from one of my buddies who I know does quite a bit of this stuff, more recreational, both DFS and betting. He goes, man, you guys must have made a lot of money betting the Bucks and the under the way you guys broke the game down. I go, we provide angles. We don't actually bet every single game that we break down in this podcast. But it's good to hear some of that feedback from time to time. And, you know, this is one of those spots I think that you and I are both conflicted because the number says one thing, but neither of us have an investment to this point on the Jets and Pats.
No, do not at this point.
Anything else you'd like to share with our loyal listeners before we bid them a fond farewell from the National Football League ranks? You can bury your head in college football minutia and be ready to come back. Guns a-blazing. Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky come Wednesday morning.
Yeah, nothing else at this point. It's Monday. Let's get out of Dodge. Everyone seems to like that line, apparently.
You know,
and we'll be back here on Wednesday and then again on Thursday.
One of our loyal listeners wants to put together a Payne Top 10 Sayings t-shirt. We may have to try and make that happen in time for, you know, Bet the Board season 63 coming back next year.
We need to figure out what number 10 is going to be since Dan Quinn is unemployed at this point.
Oh, I'm sure you'll find another coach. You can go all in on Doug Marrone or somebody else if you so choose. Mike McCarthy's a viable option. We can talk about Chan Gailey. I mean, we can make a list if you want and have our loyal listeners vote on it.
It was going to be Vrabel for a while there, but then he makes the trade for King, who has the nice defensive touchdown this week. Adoree Jackson should be back here pretty soon. Let's see what their defense looks like moving forward.
Well, we'll see. Massive game on Thursday, one that we can really get excited about that'll help the AFC South take shape with the Titans short home favorite. But to get our thoughts on that one, you're going to have to come back and listen for the Week 10 edition of the Bet the Board podcast. For Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Best of luck on Monday Night Football, whatever you choose to do in terms of investing or not investing on the Jets Patriots. We'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.